You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and my co-host, Marvin Smith, he will not be with us today, but do know that he is out there doing what he does best. He is making a positive difference in the lives of others. And as usual, each week, we will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. And we will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, with each of us having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, you know, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound and make this world a better place for all of us. And we'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our guest today, Lois Baldwin, was a supervisor and principal of special education for the Board of Cooperative Education Services of Southern Westchester in White Plains, New York. She directed, supervised, and provided comprehensive educational and support services for students in grades 1 through 12 who have average, above average, or gifted intelligence and are learning disabled and or emotionally disturbed. Now, Lois received her doctorate in gifted special education and educational administration from Teachers College in Columbia University. She is the current president and one of the founders of the Association for the Education of Gifted Underachieving Students and currently consults nationwide. Lois, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you for that very lovely introduction.
Well, I am glad to have you on because one of the things that that we run into a little bit on our end, and again, for those that don't know, we do the crisis intervention and adolescent transport of at-risk youth to specialized programs, and for many years we will run into young people that we will see that they are that they have low self-esteem, or we will see that at a time in which we are greeting them and telling them that, you know, we're going to be escorting them to an achievement program, to a specialized school that's going to be able to help them, and many times they'll kind of bow their head and say, well, you know, I guess you're doing this because I'm stupid. And one of the things that we do, and you can tell me, I mean, if this is the right thing, but we immediately go right into something saying that that is not at all. In fact, you may very well be of superior intelligence. We're just taking you somewhere where you're going to be able to really find that, and maybe a structured environment that's going to help you flourish and thrive with the gifts that you have. So that's the way that we look at it. And when I saw what your organization is doing, I've been looking forward to having you on here because I think that that's kind of the message that you're trying to get out to people as well.
Absolutely. In fact, it's not unusual for a gifted child who has either learning or emotional issues to feel like they are very stupid. And you will hear them say that. I'm stupid, I'm dumb, I can't keep up. And yet you see all sorts of indications that this child is so brilliant, so creative, so interesting, and yet they're struggling. Mm-hmm. And their self-esteem is definitely affected by all of that.
So first, I mean, tell me a little bit about the organization, about its mission, about your goal, and at what point did you realize that you needed to set up an association to bring enough people together to really go after this particular issue?
Well, many years ago, probably the early 80s, there was a colleague of mine who I met who was very much involved in looking at gifted students with learning disabilities. She had done the first dissertation. I, on the other hand, had been chosen by my organization, this BOCES that you had mentioned earlier, to be the first teacher of what they called a gifted special ed class for what we then called gifted handicapped, and who we are now calling twice exceptional learners, meaning that they have two exceptionalities, a gift plus either ADHD, a learning disability, Asperger's, which is a form of autism, blind, deaf, any kind of disability. So at that time, we realized that there was so much misunderstanding out there in the field that we came together and realized that there were other professionals and parents who were equally as interested in this group of students. And so we became the very first advocacy group. The idea was to begin to let people know, educators, parents, that these children existed and why it was so important to meet their needs, because otherwise we were going to lose them in that morass of being, you know, feeling so badly about themselves. And we know that these students can really demonstrate extreme gifts. In fact, there is now a strong, I was just reading another book, this one by Malcolm Gladwell, who was identifying that at least a third of the entrepreneurs in the world identify the fact that they have a learning disability.
Yeah, and in fact, yeah, that's a great point, and I'm also a reader of Gladwell. So, I think that they're right on, that he's right on target with that. Now, you mentioned about the twice exceptional child. Now, for a lot of our listeners that may be teachers or people that may not necessarily know how to specifically identify it, give us a picture of if there is a typical twice exceptional child.
That's a very good one, because there is no typical picture, and I think that's very important to understand. But let's talk about, first of all, the characteristics of gifted children, because when we're looking for these students, what we are looking for is what gives us the indication that this child might be gifted. And so there are things like highly developed curiosity, precocious development and use of language, active imagination, tendency toward divergent, creative, unusual thinking, keen observational skills, the ability from an early age to remember large amounts of information, unusual sense of humor, advanced moral reasoning about issues related to fairness and judgment, which are above what you would typically see in a student, and high levels of reasoning power and problem-solving abilities. And so, whereas that's what you might see on one hand, what you might also see, which is very confusing to people, is that they might be disorganized and lose track of belongings, have an uneven academic pattern with extreme areas of both strengths and weaknesses, have trouble remembering to do or follow through with tasks or sticking to a schedule, have a poor sense of time and difficulty estimating the time needed to complete tasks, such as never finishing their homework, have difficulty with multi-step instructions and performing tasks sequentially, take longer to process language and respond than might be expected, especially based on their intelligence, find it hard to be systematic in their problem solving. That might jump all over the place. And a biggie that we see all the time is difficulty with writing, organizing thoughts, writing it legibly, and spelling. Their fear of embarrassment makes them not take risks in the classroom, and they might become the class clown to divert attention from them. They might have very narrowly focused interest, and they have sometimes difficulty with social interactions. So you know, when we're looking at a student and people will say, well, I don't get it. This kid seems so smart. I listen to his language and he talks like a little professor, and yet he can't sit down and put anything on paper. And I don't get it. He's just lazy, you know. And when we start hearing the words lazy or he's just not trying hard enough, that usually means that we as adults need to look further into the issue and see what's going on. Because most kids will tell you, I don't want to fail in school, and I really am not lazy. I just can't do it. So I just stop doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you brought up some great points, because you know, you touched on the possibility of the child that on the one hand may be acting out or maybe the class clown or something like that, and that's how they choose to deal with it, and you can have somebody that would look at that and say, oh, well, they're just ADHD or something like that, and they'll kind of try and throw a tag on it. On the other hand, you're describing the child that may, because he doesn't want to deal with things, may be the one that hides in the classroom from the standpoint of, you know, kind of shutting down, sitting in the back, not really being involved, and that's how they deal with it. But essentially what I hear you saying is they're dealing with some of the same issues. They're just doing it a completely different way.
Exactly.
Okay, great.
Exactly. And there are actually three different scenarios that are typical with this population.
Okay.
One is that you see the gift first. And so you see how bright this child is and how loquacious and how active they are. And they oftentimes memorize, and they are so smart that early in their education in school, nobody picks it up until the point where they're no longer learning to read, but they're reading to learn, which is usually around fourth, fifth, sixth grade, where all of a sudden things start to happen. The student doesn't quite understand why all of a sudden things have gotten more difficult. And so you start to see behaviors that come out at that point. Another scenario is that you notice immediately this child, when he starts school, is having horrendous difficulties with reading or writing and or social issues. And so what tends to happen is that people then focus on the disability and either are not looking at the gift at all, or figure out that, well, we can deal with the gift later. Right now we need to work on the disability. And so the child becomes the feeling of, wow, I must be disabled, I must be really stupid, and so that's the second scenario. The third scenario is the child whose gift is strong enough that it can mask the disability, and the disability is strong enough that it masks the gift. And so it's a child who always looks like they're average. They bounce along at about a C level, and people will see sparks and wonder, well, why isn't that student, they seem to be brighter than they are, and yet the child basically just goes along at a very average level and never meets its potential, at least not in the school environment.
Now, what can be done to get around that? I mean, we want to, if it's at all possible, obviously get away from the fact of just trying to make a bunch of mediocre people, especially when they have these gifts. How can we identify it quicker, and what can we do to help them achieve, you know, all the greatness that we know that they can achieve?
Well, I think one of the things that happens is that parents see their child, especially when they're before they start school, and they see all this potential, and they see these kids are really doing quite well. School becomes frustrated because either they don't see a lot of that, or they see the behaviors. And so it's really important that it takes a village to work with these students. It really takes the cooperation of school and home working together. And so one of the things that is very important is that teachers understand the fact that these students do exist, and so there is still out there the myth that you can't have either a learning issue or an emotional issue if you're gifted. Well, we all know, those of us who are in the field, that that is absolutely false. And I'm hopeful that with a number of these very important CEOs that are now coming out, you know, Richard Branson, Charles Schwab, Whoopi Goldberg, some of these people who are now saying how difficult it was for them in school and the fact that they had a disability, the hope is that people will start to see, oh, wow, you could be smart and have some issue in school. Okay, so that's a hope. And then we really do need to continue to help teachers, because most teachers do not get courses in gifted education as they are preparing for teaching. And so it depends on what state you're in, whether that's part of your teacher preparation or not. So it's very important that we continue to help teachers understand that these students are in their classrooms and help them to look below the behaviors to look at what are the learning issues that are going on to help them so that they can help the student. And then to help parents not react negatively to the school, to go in and work with the school in the effort to let's work together. I understand my child and I know he's not easy, but here's what I see. How can we work together?
That's a great point. And as you were saying that, we have an instant message coming through with a question. And this person writes, you know, can you tell us which states you have programs running in, and do you provide advice or guidance for parents who may not be in the supported areas? I have a friend with 5 children, one of who I think fits this description to a T.
Yes. There are definite states that understand more about twice exceptional. The one state that is very much aligned with twice exceptional is Colorado. They actually have a twice exceptional project, which I am working on at the state level, where they are training teachers, and it's really quite an extraordinary program. And anybody can go online and look at the Colorado Department of Education website, where they will see that there's information about twice exceptional students. And so they can get more information. So that's one possibility. Do I consult? Absolutely. But I think it's difficult when the more a parent or a teacher can become educated about this subject so that they can see that there are things that they can do that are part of their everyday process is important.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about the process. Now, what is the process that you would recommend be implemented in the school systems? So, you know, be it for the teacher or for the parent, what sort of process have you recommended that has been implemented, and is that the same thing then that you would like to see implemented into other states?
Absolutely. When you look at, for example, as I mentioned, most of the time these students exist in a classroom. Some of them, but rarely, get IEPs, or individual educational plans, which are mandated by the federal government if you have a disability. But many of these students, that does not happen for them. However, what can happen for them is when you sit down and have a conversation about a student who you think is twice exceptional, the biggest or the most important thing to do is to understand it has to be a dual emphasis. You can't just focus on the disability, nor can you focus only on the strength. You have to be focusing on both at the same time. So that means that, let's say, for example, the strength. All right. So if the student is extraordinary in science, all right, has an incredible interest in science, watches every program on TV and science, has got a science lab down in the basement that he's been working on since he was a 5 year old, always coming in with bugs and plants and ants, you know, all those kinds of things. So what can you do that will allow this student to demonstrate his strength and just focused on the strength, so that you might want to accelerate him in the science area, or you might want to do a content extension so that he can go deeper. You might want him to do his own individual project along with science. At the same time, this student, let's say this is a student with dyslexia. So as much as you would love to have him really fly with his strengths, you also know that he's struggling with reading. So that means that you probably need to work on his reading skills and really focus helping him to learn to read. Then you, at the same time, will need to help him with compensatory strategies, such as you might want to let him do books on tape so that he can get more information, or set him up with a mentor, or have him do a PowerPoint instead of a report, so that he can, or if he's a very verbal child, you might want to have him do an oral report rather than a written report, because his writing is so difficult. Technology is out there now to help these students. There are all sorts of strategies that can help them. And at the same time, you want to help support him emotionally so that the child begins to feel like, oh, okay, I see that you understand that I have this strength, and yet at the same time, you know that I have this issue with reading, and so, yes, thank you for helping me with both areas at the same time.
Right.
They
now,
need to both be going on at the same time.
Okay, and what percentage of time or effort do you think should be placed on one versus the other?
It everything depends on the child. It's
okay.
Very, very dependent on the child. Now, let me give you an example, all right? So for this last spring, I was called in on a case where a child had stopped going to school. His mother was having a horrible time getting him to school. He was anxious, just really unhappy. And so when we finally sat down to look at this child, we found out that, first of all, he was staying up way too late, because the minute he got home from school, he is an expert in Minecraft, which is one of those computer things. And so he would get home and immediately get on the computer and start talking to people all over the world who were communicating with him about Minecraft. Turns out that he is such an expert in Minecraft, he's a fifth grader, he is such an expert that he received an award from the designer of Minecraft this summer. Okay, he you know,
great.
Big national, international award for his work in Minecraft. Okay, so what we ultimately did, this is obviously something that is more of an after-school activity, and so we pulled him in, had a conversation about his strengths, which he loved because somebody was acknowledging his strengths, and that was very exciting for him, and we hooked him up with a high school student who is going to now mentor him and work with him, and they're going to pull together a club when he finally next year gets to the middle school. At the same time, he continued to receive his help with his reading disability. And then we realized we needed to start making some accommodations for him. So we reduced the amount of homework that he was getting. He was told that no matter what, the school had a rule that he thought he was going to be able to get out of, which meant that if you did not do your homework, you had to stay in for recess. So then we helped him with a schedule, and he met with the psychologist once a week to go over what was his homework going to be, when could he do that, and his mother then said when he got home every day, when do you want to spend your half an hour doing your homework, so that you look at your own schedule, take responsibility for your own schedule, and so that got put into place. Then his mother very smartly took him to counseling. He stayed there for probably 3 months and then said, I don't need this anymore. And his mother very smartly continued in counseling for herself so that she could learn strategies to help him and so that she didn't become too involved and was able to start letting him take more responsibility for his own learning and his own issues. So it was a multi-step process, but two things had to happen at the same time. One was his remediation and accommodations and modifications had to happen while there was a focus on the strengths and his interests.
Wow. Thank you for that. I mean, that I wouldn't have put together the first part as far as the modifications. I think that's very, very interesting and also very positive in regards to what's working for some of these young people. And we're going to take a break. Again, the subject is Twice Exceptional Kids, Finding and Nurturing Gifted, Talented Students with Challenges and Disabilities. We will be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And you're back. You're listening to
Okay.
You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our subject is Twice Exceptional Kids. Our guest is Lois Baldwin. And Lois, you know, I was thinking about what you were just saying in regards to some of the other people that are starting to discuss the fact that, you know, very successful people, that they may have dealt with some of these issues. And it made me think of someone who I respect greatly and have met him and gone to some of his seminars, but that's the motivational speaker, John Maxwell. And he talks about himself in kind of the same light. And one of the things that he says, which is very similar to what you're talking about, is he said that in school, he could not get math. It just didn't work for him. But at the same time, he realized that he excelled in other areas. And he said what he thought the biggest mistake at that time of the public school system was the things that he excelled at. They said, don't worry about these things anymore. You've got that. So don't even worry about it. Spend, you know, 80% of your time all on math because it's what you don't get. And obviously he disagrees with that. In fact, he has a great line. He said that once he got old enough to realize that, his answer was, you know what? I'm going to focus on the things that I'm really good at and I'm not going to put as much time into math because I'm going to be so successful at the other things, I'll hire people to count my money.
He is absolutely right. I couldn't agree with him more. In fact, when I do workshops with classroom teachers, I ask them to think about what they were absolutely worst at in school. And so they'll go around the room, and so many times it happens to be math, but, you know, it'll be many other things. And I'll say to them, all right, so now tomorrow you're going back into school, and you're going to spend 5 out of your 6 hours working on math. How do you feel? And immediately you can see the reactions in the room, and people start saying, oh my goodness, I'd stop going to school. I would be in the teacher's, I'd be in the bathroom. I would be in the nurse's office. I would be under the desk. I would be avoiding, you know, there were so many behaviors that you start to hear them say. And then all of a sudden it starts to click for them. Oh my goodness. Is that what's happening with these kids who are having difficulty? So if your full day is nothing but working on what you are not good at, then no wonder these kids start to give up. No wonder they start avoiding school or being class clowns or having behavior problems.
Right. And you just, and when you touched on it before and you brought up the thing about low self-esteem, well, how good do you feel about yourself if you're forced to put all of your time into something that you don't get?
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And we have another listener question, and this one reads, I have been a junior counselor for a residential treatment facility for troubled boys in northern Texas for the last 3 years. So many of these kids are so bright with rather exaggerated learning disabilities. I see so much frustration and anger around their inability to do well in school subjects. Their self-esteem is low, and it is no wonder. I am going to talk to my supervisors about your program and encourage them to get in touch with your group.
Great. So, I mean, I would like to there was a research study that was done quite a few years ago now called High Hopes. And they brought together students who had emotional difficulties, learning disabilities, ADHD, and who were also blind and deaf. And so what they did is they divided the students into their areas of strength. So they had their little scientists, their artists, and there, let's see, what was the third group? I can't remember what the third group was at the moment. But anyway, so they divided the students, and they gave them a project. And they said, for this week, you will design a project because there's a pond out there that has a lot of scum on it and is falling, you know, any of the infrastructure has started to fall apart, so the pond is not workable any longer. So you will design a presentation, you will research, you will do whatever you have to do to come before the experts and give a presentation about what you would do with this pond. Well, so these students in their area of strength worked on pulling together this presentation. So the engineers really, you know, they studied it and they came up with the engineering principles, and they met, they had a mentor who was an engineer who would help them. And then they had the artists who came up with a much more had to do with the art of what they were going to do with this pond. And then they had drama, the kids who were really good at drama, and they acted out what happened to the animals and why it was important to do this. And later, the teachers who were sitting there, who had these kids during the school year, looked at these kids and said, but these kids never respond like that. They never, well, the difference was, is that they focused on an area of strength, and they allowed that child to demonstrate their strengths while accommodating their disabilities. And so these kids who had all these behavioral issues had none for that entire week. So it was really quite extraordinary for the teachers to see, wow, if we change some of what we do, maybe the students will change some of how they respond.
Absolutely. I think that's beautiful. I love that. And we have another an email question that has come in, and this one reads, as a parent, what can we do to get our school and or district to do more to help these children who seem like they get left behind or ignored rather than celebrated for their gifts?
Well, most schools don't want the kids to be left behind. I mean, that's, you know, teachers are in the business of teaching because they really care about kids and they want kids to succeed. So part of the problem is that they need to do staff development to understand these kids exist. And so the more they can do staff development and bring in some of the experts that are in this country, or, you know, do a book club where they read a book about this type of child or look at YouTube videos. There is material out there at this point. And as I said, I know the Colorado Department of Education has material on their website that people can access. There's a fabulous newsletter called the 2E newsletter that is very easy to read. And it brings in, you know, things such as the myths of learning, understanding the 2E child. It's all about the 2E child. And so they cover the various aspects of what it doesn't mean to be a 2E child with ADHD or with learning disabilities or with Asperger's. So that's, there are ways to go and get more training and more understanding about these students.
Now, do you find that some of the children that are in private schools versus public schools, that the private schools tend to deal with it a little bit better, or is it somewhat the same?
Well, it depends on, again, it depends on the private school. There are private schools that have no tolerance for a student who has learning issues, whereas there are other private schools that have now clearly understood that they need to be out there and accommodate their students who have ADHD or learning issues. So it really, every private school is very different. And so as a parent, if you're thinking in terms of private versus public, you need to ask exactly the same questions that you would ask in a public school. How will you accommodate my child's strengths, and what will you do to help my child with his area of weakness or challenge?
Right, and I think that's a great point, and we've had educational consultants on the show as well, and I think that's an important thing too, is that talk to professionals, talk to people that can tell you that these schools are already staffed and geared up and ready to handle, you know, a child like yours, you know, and as you're saying, ask the right questions so that you know, is this going to be a good fit or not?
So, exactly. Because not every school is a good fit for every child. And just like, I mean, as I've been describing, you know, ADHD, learning disabilities, Asperger's, blind and deaf. I mean, students have different personalities and they have different learning styles, and so not every school is set up for every child. And that's why having a continuum, which there is for the most part out there, is the most important thing. So you go from being right in the classroom, in a general education classroom with, again, accommodations and modifications and focus on strengths, to, you know, very separate schools where there are those kind of, you know, programs set up just for 2E students.
Yeah. We have another question that's coming across the computer. This one reads, as a teacher of special ed children in the public school system, are there any books or seminars you can recommend to help me do my job to the best of my ability?
Oh, what a great question. I love her. So first of all, I would definitely look at the 2E newsletter. It's online. It's something that, as a teacher, it's great to have. There is, well, okay, so understanding what this population is about, there's a wonderful book by Susan Baum and Stephen Owen called To Be Gifted and Learning Disabled. There's another one called Misdiagnosis and Dual Diagnosis of Gifted Children and Adults by Webb and Associates. There's another one which is quite interesting called Learning Outside the Lines by Jonathan Mooney and David Cole. So, and then again, just getting online to look up the 2E, you know, what is 2E, you know, so that you get to understanding, you know, how to differentiate and how to find these students. Because once you find them, again, there's no one process or intervention that needs to happen. It has to be based on the individual child.
Okay, and if someone wants to get a hold of you or to get a hold of the Association for the Education of Gifted Underachieving Students, what website or phone number should they use?
The easiest way to get a hold of me would be to go to loisbaldwin2e@gmail.com.
Okay.
And the association does not have a way of actually going in, and you would have to come to me to be able to access that.
Okay, and but if they just want to go to the site
to aegis1.org, we haven't updated it in a while, so we still need to work on that, but we are doing that.
Okay, great. Now, for those that you know, that have listened to the show, they know that one of my favorite parts of every show are the success stories. And I mean, and there's a variety of reasons why I like either those parents out there that are dealing with a child and they're a little confused right now, or those professionals that are working with young people. And it kind of reinforces the fact that this is why we do what we do. So I'd love it if you could share a couple of success stories with us.
Okay. Well, the one that I talked about earlier, he's become a real success story, the little guy who didn't want to go to school and was so anxious. Well, he is absolutely, in 3 months, he was coming to school, and even the teachers and the principal, who is very aggravated with him because she had him in her office a little too often, they were all thrilled. Everyone saw the difference, including the parents and each one of his teachers. So that's one success story. So another one would be my friend Matthew, who was actually my student. And Matthew was he actually started first grade early. And because everybody said he is so precocious, he is so verbal, he eats all the air in the room, he's so animated and, you know, wonderful. So they said, wow, start him in first grade, skip kindergarten. Well, that turned out to be a disaster, because when they got him to first grade, it turned out that he had a reading problem. He was dyslexic, and nobody, of course, knew that back earlier, because he memorized the books when his mother read them to him, so he could read them back to her word for word because he memorized them. After a very unsuccessful first grade year, and he was in a private school, by the way, he was retained and kept for a second year in second grade. Well, this school didn't have the technology or the understanding of how to work with a student who had a disability. And so they did the same things they did the year before, thinking, well, maybe with a little maturity, you know, he'll learn it. Well, he didn't. And so what ultimately happened is that he became so frustrated that he dumped over his desk and ran out of the building and said, I'm never coming back. I am stupid and I'm an idiot and I'm not going to school anymore. Well, at second grade, you don't get away with that, obviously. And so so the parents were just beside themselves and put him back into the public school, where he just was, again, having great difficulty, and it was very clear within the first month or two of being in school that wasn't working either. So they ultimately put him into my classroom. At that point, I was teaching the gifted class for kids who had learning and emotional issues. And it was a very small class full of kids just like him. So he was there with other kids who had some kind of learning issue, but they were gifted. And so when he walked in there and realized, oh, he's got a reading problem, but look how brilliant he is. Oh my goodness, he's got a math problem, but look how brilliant he is. And so suddenly he took a very deep breath and said, oh, I'm not so unusual. And I think that's the other piece of this. As we talk about these students, they feel like they're the only ones in the entire world who have these issues because people don't talk about it. They don't give them other examples of, you know, kids like these. So the more, you know, when you're working with this type of child, if you can demonstrate for them that there are other kids like themselves, they'll just shine. You know, really important for them to know that they're not the only ones. And when I say that, by the way, I think it's important for them to read Learning Outside the Lines by Jonathan Mooney, who is clearly gifted and learning disabled, or to look at Henry Winkler's books, which are good for elementary students. It's the Hank Zipser series, which is absolutely adorable because it talks about Hank, who is so smart, but yet he's always in trouble and has learning problems. So those are two really nice books that, one for the older student and one for the younger student that can be used. But anyway, going back to Matthew, he ultimately, within probably 2 years, settled back in and started to become a student. Lots of accommodations, lots of work on his strengths. His strengths were very verbal. He loved history. Just absorbed everything he could about history on the History Channel and any other way he could get information. And so eventually he went back to high school, and at that point they were not going to put him into the advanced uh-huh. history classes, but he advocated for himself and the teacher allowed it, even though he was in the remedial math class and never did finish he just never got math, just like John Maxwell. He never got it, but he ultimately graduated with honors, and his mother called me the day he graduated crying and saying, I remember when you told me he would be able to do this and I didn't believe you. And so he went on to get his degree and became a lawyer. And now he's out there advocating for others. So there are absolutely wonderful stories of success that are out there. But it's important, again, that we look at each child individually and come up with how do we focus on the strengths while also helping with the challenge.
Okay. I said, are there any colleges that do a better job at recognizing these gifts than others?
I think, again, well, colleges are really wonderful for many of these students, and the reason being is that usually you can go in and focus on your strength. That's where suddenly you, and also what happens in 11th and 12th grade for many of these students is that they've gotten through the requirements and now they can start taking some of the courses that they're excited about and really want to learn about. But colleges, many of them now have centers for learning issues. And so it's helping the student learn to advocate for themselves, so that they can go in and realize, you know what, I do need extra time, or I do need to talk to the professor about getting the notes in a different way, or being able to tape record his lecture, or, you know, there are lots of different ways to accommodate students. And so But a lot of schools now do have programs that are set up so that students can go into the learning disability centers or the learning centers and get accommodations or help where they didn't used to have that.
Right. Lois, thank you so much. The time has absolutely flown by. Again, for anybody out there, if you were driving, if you weren't able to write down the website, go to ours, answers, the numeral 4, thefamily.com. We will have all of Lois's information there. Lois, thank you so much for everything
that you
do.
You're so welcome.
And please keep us posted on what you're doing and what we can do to help get the word out.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And for everybody else, please stay with us for just a moment longer. We're going to hear from Darnell, who's going to have a very warm message about my friend and her mother, Donya.
My name is Darnell Young, and I'm desperately reaching out for help. In 1970, after a blood transfusion, my mom contracted hepatitis C, which later evolved into terminal liver cancer. A transplant is her only chance of survival, and we don't have the means to fund the surgery. My stepdad's working as much as he can, and I just got off chemotherapy myself, so I've been limited in what I can do. Any amount you could give would help our family more than you can possibly know. You can go to our fundraising website at youcaring.com. That's youcaring.com. And search One Family's Battle, onefamily_battle. And you can donate directly there. Don't forget to capitalize the first letter of all those words. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.